Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I've got an oddball question before we dive in.
Okay.
Vinnie Blengs, who passed away over the weekend. Yeah.
He ran horses years ago, so I don't have
a
lot to say. You know, I love when you do that.
Hey,
I'm sorry he passed away.
No, I was wondering if you had any, because the horse that came to mind from New York, all right, because he had one that I just remember that sticks in my head, named Let's Get Cozy. I remember cashing a ticket on Let's Get Cozy, and he's one of those New England and Mid-Atlantic names. Yeah, and the reason I'm bringing him up is it's a segue to Barkley Tag and several great
it's a
stories.
Segue to Barkley because Vinny died.
Well,
I'm sure Barkley's going to appreciate this.
Well, because
do you know something that we don't know?
No, because he was in Maryland by that point, by the late 90s, the 2000s, and he was one of those guys that would ship in, and that was my early introduction to Barkley Tag was coming up from. Coming up from the Mid-Atlantic, the shipping in and winning. And Blengs was that same kind of, had that same M.O. Tis the Law doesn't have to ship in because he's been waiting for this spot. What was your thought going into this, Andy, in the Champagne? Obviously, Jimmy bypassed the hopeful and the track came up very heavy and... that was
Jimmy
the bypassed
showdown. Hopeful. Did Jimmy want to run him, or well, he was scratched from the hopeful, whose decision was to scratch him. I don't know if it was Jimmy's or connection. So, I'm not. I don't know. We've talked about Tis the Law 30 times in this show. So, my surprise that he won. I don't know. I picked him, and you and I've said I don't know 15 times in your show that he ran the best 2-year-old race of anybody in Saratoga. So, I'm not at all surprised that he won. He's a terrific horse. His first race was sensational. It was definitely the best 2-year-old race we saw in Saratoga all summer. He's green, and he's still managing to win these races. I think he's gonna have a huge career. So I'm a big fan of Tis the Law. I wouldn't say he had a bad trip on Saturday by any stretch of the imagination, but what he had was a trip that gave him a little bit of an education, which is never a bad thing, and he still won quite easily. And I don't think that Green Lights Go ran particularly well. He is the only horse, I will say, that effectively ran on the rail on Saturday. I don't think the rail was bad. I think riders stayed away from it for the most part, and I probably should watch some more races, but the possibility wasn't in the absolute best part of the racetrack, but... I think he ran fine. We'll see. I mean, I guess in retrospect, the turn of the rail wasn't the place to be. He ran very, very well. I don't know if that's the case. I'm just suggesting it as a possibility because I was looking through the races on yesterday, and it did seem like it was at least worth thinking about. Forgetting about that for a minute, he didn't move forward distance, which is not a good sign. I don't love the horses that finish sort of in the pack for second, third, and fourth. I don't think that Godzilla is going to be an effective router going forward, and it's hard to be overly optimistic about the horse who I think finished third in there. But Tis the Law was good. And the fact that he missed some time because he had a shin issue and that he came back and got those works, and Barkley even thought it was okay to take a shot. He could have waited for the Sleepy Hollow. He wasn't. He was sort of on the fence about his race. He's good. He's very good. I think he's as good as any 2-year-old we've seen. Dennis Bowman at this point is probably the best of them. But between Tis the Law, who's not going to run the Breeders' Cup, and the winner of the race at Keeneland and Three Rings out in California and Dennis's Moment, and even some others. Good colts, not good fillies at this point.
Yeah, it's true. We'll talk about the Frisette. We should mention, Tis the Law, the decision coming yesterday, that they'll go to Churchill for November.
Yeah, they're saying they're going to probably go to Churchill and not Remsen, which surprised me. But I guess what Barkley said made a certain amount of sense. I think the whole notion of getting a race at Churchill is frivolous. I don't, you know, she likes the Churchill track. I think that's more racetrack BS. But having said that, he said, you know, he'll be heading to Florida anyway, so it's sort of on the way and whatever. So I guess that makes a certain amount of sense. I don't know. I was surprised because Barkley sort of does usually stick in New York, but it is, and it's the first week in, you know, it's the first full week in December. And I guess what works in sort of, you know, giving more time from the Breeders' Cup might hurt in this situation, and that probably Barkley's already shipping down to Florida before then, right? So he figures I'm going to be leaving anyway. So why don't I go there? So I guess I was a little surprised. I thought they would probably, because he said Remsen or Jockey Club, but okay. It won't be the biggest catastrophe ever.
No, and you get, there's some benefit to running over that track too. And
I don't think so, but I think that's just all crap. But I'm sure the majority of people disagree with me, so I'm probably wrong, but I didn't think that whole, oh, he won at Churchill. It's kind of like the how everybody talks about the random time that one horse is working great wins the Derby, and all the horses that we've heard about over the years that were working great. Who was that horse that won the race at Fairgrounds? I want to say was the Derby or the Risen Star. It was sort of improving. He's working great at Churchill. Has he run since he ran nowhere at the Derby?
By my standards, you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny.
What happened. But the point is nobody ever heard of him after he didn't run well in the Derby because he didn't run well, but he was running great. Good horses are supposed to work great.
Yeah.
I understand. I know there's a lot of people that will be annoyed by that comment, but I don't know. You know, Twitter's a buzz with everybody's looking great in the mornings.
As you know, I was up from. I never went back to sleep after 12:30.
You really didn't?
No, I didn't. But I got a lot of work done. I went through stacks and stacks of PPs and stuff. And it's funny. One of the things I save the Triple Crown weekend PPs and I put them in binders. And so I they were sitting loose, so I put them in their binder for the year. Churchill, Pimlico, and Belmont, and one of the horses, while I was looking through charts, I saw the name, because I also had the Fairgrounds lead up, and I said, by my standards, we gotta find out from Brett Calhoun what's going on.
Maybe he's run.
No, I don't think so. I think he's sidelined, and I did kind of remember that he was going to be.
Oh, he was the big buzz horse
He was like a metronome out there. I'm just curious. Let me see if he's got no works listed at all. So he's sidelined. Yeah, he's sidelined.
Did it help Improbable? big thing with Improbable, right? He had run that allowance race on the side of the day.
Breeders' Cup.
Acted as badly as he ever does in the Derby. Right?
Before we talk the older horses, let's get the other two-year-old thing in as well. The Frisette, delighted for the Lieblongs, for Alex and Joanne Lieblong, to get a grade one like this with the two-year-old filly Wicked Whisper. And you know, came back with a respectable figure.
We just signed it. We haven't seen a Steve Aspen horse do in over 5 years. The two-year-old that won his debut that came back to win a great stake in its next start. That's now 1 for 17.
That's
that
right.
In and of itself is an accomplishment.
That's right.
Of course, she went to the lead and in a race that there were about two other significant speeds and none of them decided to use her speed. It made her job easier, but she was best in there by a lot. But I think track's pretty kind of speed. No, she did. She ran a respectable number, right? What'd she get? 78 or something?
No, higher. 80. 80
oh, 84. Oh, okay.
84.
So she's right up there with the horse who won the Alcibiades. It's the fastest preps.
Yes.
I know she did hers under the most advantageous circumstances. We'll see. I mean, listen, she's half the point of honor. She's not supposed to have a problem with the distance from that perspective. No, we'll see. It's nice to see a couple of two-year-olds fillies running over 80. No, we saw Mark Hennig's maiden.
82, I think, right?
Yeah, what's the that horse? What's his name again?
There
was a filly and a colt he won with, both of them.
Yeah, and boy, was he the cat who ate the canary? Let me tell you, walking down onto the track apron.
Listen, he struggled in Saratoga, you know, and it's tough to do that. But he's come back Belmont. His horses have been running very, very well.
Yeah.
And those were very promising two-year-old maiden winners. When you think that they got 82 and 83 buyers, and the filly got an 82. And the filly got, you know, a very good trip, and that it was a super contested pace, and she made the last move. But still, she ran. And, you know, this is a horse that had been bet in its first start and did not have a good trip that day. It was an inside track, and pace held together, and kind of made a middle move in there. So she's okay. And we'll bring up the charts from Saturday.
Medean is her name.
Sonneman, yeah. Wish she broke its maiden last time. I would have made more money last time, and I would have made more money on Saturday. So, but those were two very, very, you know, worth mentioning maiden wins, especially the filly. When you consider, you know, that we're talking about the top two, you know, the Ouse Bias Brissette winner getting 84s. She got an 82 buyer. She's okay.
Yeah.
See her maybe in attempted, in Nashville for both of those horses on Breeders' Cup weekend at Aqueduct. But those were good. They were good races. I mean, I guess, you know, the Whisper horses could be okay. It's just, you just don't know, you know, when they get more adversity. But absolutely ran well.
We should fold in while we're on the 2-year-old subject. Let's also slip in Alms, the Stidham. Runner, and boy, some weekend, I mentioned this yesterday for Godolphin, Albertrani as well, and with
Final Frontier winning.
Final Frontier, yeah.
Let's rename that race the Belmont Sprint Championship. It just rolls off the tongue. No, it's good races, and Oms was very good because she did not have a good trip in there. The pace held together. The horse was on the lead, almost won, had to make a wide move, was four wide for a significant part of the turn, and was really able to accelerate off that and run down the loose speed. That horse ran well. Very impressed by that horse. Leslie Ward's horse, the one on Sunday, was impressive, too. They won the Futurity.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I don't know. It's more impressive than Oms.
I was going to mention
four-wheel drive.
Four-wheel drive, but all, it's funny. He had four-wheel drive go wire to wire, and then he had that Kamari at Keeneland that was like shot out of a cannon.
Well, the race did collapse.
I get it. What do you give that horse's chances at the eighth pole? At the 16th pole?
Don't know. Have to watch it again. It's a slow race. I don't get worked up about horses that win slow races and come from behind races that collapsed. I mean, look at the chart. Race collapsed, right?
Well, out of curiosity, explain that, Andy, because...
Because the horse is running the flow of the race. If the whole race is collapsing and the horse makes a move from last, chances are the horse is very much in the flow of the race. So it's going to make it look better than it is. And then when the race comes up slow in a speed figure standpoint, listen, I've only seen the buyer figures. Maybe somebody else did faster. They got a 74 buyer. That there's just a chance it was just a bad race. What's the line? There's no trips in slow races.
That's right.
And people tend to get overly impressed with horses that make runs from the back of the pack. I don't know. Isn't that the nature of turf racing? Before we started, you know, the snatch and grab routine in New York, and what a pathetic display of that did we see in the Joe Hirsch. Well, that race was really ugly. With all due respect to the contestants, who are not bad horses, but there were some shockingly foolish choices. I mean, why Manny Franco? And, you know, I love Manny, but why he rated Cross Border in there? My God. Why would you have that horse in the race?
What else?
Certainly the Connections wanted to go to the lead there, so we know that. That was insane. And, you know, and I give a lot of credit to both. Jose Lescano was riding Sadler's Joy. And Junior, who was riding Arklow, who had trouble on the first turn, was forced out by, in fact, I think, Cross Border, who was resenting having his face ripped off. And, you know, and he forced his way to the pace, too. And the only reason that Arklow won the race, frankly, the only reason that Savage Grove was even there at the end was that their riders took them completely out of their games because they actually sensed that they were totally crawling. And, I mean, John Velasquez did what he could to take advantage of. I guess he could have gone a little faster and been further in front, but he's supposed to probably win in those circumstances. And if those guys hadn't taken their horses out of their games, then Channelmaker would have won for fun. But, man, I mean, come on. You know, I mean, even Yo Primo, it's like, okay, I know that you didn't want him in the front last time, and obviously it completely diminished his chances, but that doesn't mean you have to grab coming out of the gate. You know, if you let the horses find a rhythm coming out of the gate, then you can be placed depending on what the pace is. But for him to be dead last behind the most ridiculous slow pace after being in front in a very contested pace, well, just because you made one mistake doesn't mean you come back and make the next mistake. You know, it's become an epidemic in some of these turf races, this preposterously slow paces. And, I mean, it's like, don't people realize that this doesn't enhance your chances, ripping their faces up off slow paces? I mean, I'm not saying every pace has to be blistering, but come on.
No,
that race. I mean, I realize without all the time, the distance turf horses in this country, if the Europeans aren't sitting over there and salivating about coming over for the Breeders' Cup turf, they're even crazier than we are. My God, look at this. Look at the ball. I mean, I don't want to knock them, but come on. Come on. This is not. I mean, the best horses are horses that were significant also-rans last year in a race where I know it was a Naval, but still, she and the second horse was Magical. How far in front of the third horse were they? 10 lengths?
9 lengths, yeah.
Right. I mean, come on. In a turf race? In a Breeders' Cup turf race? You know what that says?
Yeah.
There might be 20 horses over in Europe that could be favored in this race, individually. It's no different, frankly, than that Jockey Club Derby we ran, right? Where really, you know, moderate Europeans came over here and just embarrassed our horses because they're ready to go a mile and a half, of course, and our horses aren't. That's a big factor, but they're also okay. I don't think the Hill Prince did a lot to displace the notion that our three-year-old turf horses this year, for the most part, are just not a particularly exciting group.
Yeah,
God knows we've given them a chance to prove that different.
Well, it was a clever spotting by Baltus and...
Yeah,
to come in for this. That was
come in. You don't see horses come from California these turf races too often. Though we saw Drysdale do it last year with that California horse who won the Sands Point.
La Sardane or Toinette?
No, California something. California Gold Rush.
Oh,
that was Wynn. That was Wynn. No.
The two that he was trotting around the, and of course he won with Toinette the other day, but back home.
No, Toinette was done running after the Oaks last year, I think, and she was good. I mean, she was good. No, that was Brian Lynch, wasn't it? No, Brian Lynch won the Oaks, La Sardane. Toinette was the one who got the good setup and beat Russian Falls and Daddy Horse for George Weaver in the Edgewood.
Daddy's a legend.
Your dad's legend.
Yeah, California
Gold.
Right. California Gold Rush was correct. Yep.
Right, won the Sands Point that they moved to the spot of the Garden City.
Yeah, Sardane won the Intercontinental.
Right.
Toinette won the Edgewood. Well, there you go. Yeah. And Vexatious won the Dowager.
Oh, Sardane did. Yeah, I'm thinking of La. Who's the horse that won the prep for the Wonder Again? Horse of Brian Lynch has went to lead, the horse has gotten good for Chad Brown for Peter Brandt or Stephanie Seymour.
I know you mean Peter. I think it's the Jim and Susan Hill with the orange yellow stripe.
Well, that's the Daddy. Yeah, Daddy's a legend. But I'm talking about.
No, but I think Brian too.
I think second. I'm terrible with names. Whatever.
I think Lynch has got horses for the hills too.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
No, but I don't think that was their horse.
All right.
Anyway.
It might have been an Ammerman. Might have been an Ammerman. There you go.
I don't know.
Couple of other notes from, I think we got Saturday covered. Speaking of paces and what went on in that Flower Bowl. And
well, even that, you got a rabbit that's in front by 10 lengths. They won 115, the 6 furlong.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I will say, there's a little give in the ground in those, especially the inner turf races, even Saturday and Sunday. But still, that race was a second slower than the allowance race earlier. And with all due respect to Red Right Hand, who's improved, I don't think anybody thinks he's Sister Charlie. And that race came up a second faster. Now, a lot of it was pace-related, but even pace is about the same race. To be honest, this was the worst race that Sister Charlie has run since she won, since she lost to New Money Honey in the Belmont Oaks when she came back less than 2 weeks after the Prix Diane. That doesn't mean she's not a wonderful horse. That hasn't had a wonderful career. It's been sensational this year. But you take this race apart, and this is not an effort that's going to win a Breeders' Cup race. Is it possible she doesn't run her best race at all? I guess. I mean, it's easy to point to because she did lose her other two races, though I thought she ran just as well in the New York defeat to Four Star Crook last year as really she did in her victory. So I don't subscribe to that notion. I would say a couple of things. The turf did have some give, and if you watch it, they were kicking up on the outside. And also, I do think if you look at the inner turf races this weekend, there's an argument that there was an advantage to be inside, which is not shocking being that the rails came down. And that race was run in a manner that unless you thought that Thais was going to wire the field, which she did run third, it was going to have an outside flow. So you could argue that the horses outside were a bit hampered by the racetrack, which might have shaved a little bit off of her effort, both the winner and the second horse. I think it was a nice horse for Grand Motion. So maybe it's an effort that's a little bit better than it looks if you consider the racetrack. So I'll give her a little bit there. It wasn't as big an effort. I mean, she could have won much more easily. Now also, because they didn't want to get her in trouble, Johnny moved her out to clear in the three wide, the back stretch, and I think it's the right move to do in a horse like that. I'm in no way being critical. And then she's making that move uncovered, so she's not going to have that kind of burst when you're not covered up at any point coming out for the explosion. So there's some mitigating circumstances, but I think that race makes her a little more vulnerable going to the Breeders' Cup than she would have been beforehand. Beforehand, you'd almost say, well, boy, they better really run. They better bring the right Europeans to try to beat her. After that race, I think it opens up the question that, is it possible, now it's towards the end of her five-year-old year, that maybe she tailed off? I'm not saying it's the case, but I think it's fair to at least ask the question.
Yeah, and what about the stablemate? Can she, why can't she go out on her own and win some stakes?
Well, maybe, but maybe she's more useful as a rabbit. I don't know. The idea that we haven't used rabbits in this country, that needs to change. And just for the pure aesthetics of the race, too many horses are constantly losing any opportunity to run their best races because of the preposterously slow paces. Because every horse is trained to close. And what you have, and people can say, oh, it's a Chad Brown factor. Well, Chad Brown was not exactly a super strong factor in a lot of these races. So it's not just that. It's a general concept. And Thread of Blue was able to take advantage of it greatly. And, you know, he had no excuse in losing on Saturday. He did run second. But, you know, that race was just ridiculous. And I think something needs to happen to make these races more, if we're going to run more of these turf races and theoretically create what we believe are more important turf races, they need to be run in a manner that everybody has a bit of a chance in there. And if you're a talented horse, but you have speed, a rabbit isn't supposed to eliminate your chances if you're still good. A rabbit's just supposed to make the race fairer. And I've always been a fan of, they call them pace setters in Europe, they use them all the time, and we praise their racing. Why wouldn't we also emulate them?
It's a good question, and it's not as if it's not as if
it's not unfair.
It's bad. No,
I mean, fair. In fact, it makes the races fairer. Just because you have a rabbit doesn't mean that you're going to win. It just makes the races so that the horses that are closing have a chance to get into the race at some point. My God. I mean, that Hill Prince this weekend was just ridiculous. You can't tell me that all of the closers are that bad. They're not. The only closer that made any kind of run, and he actually had trouble in the first turn, was Digital Age. He's the only one, and he finished fifth and really wasn't a factor at all. Maybe it's just not a particularly good bunch of horses. That's also a real possibility. But it seems like the pace scenario, and it doesn't just mean three-year-olds, it's hard to get past what's going on in these races.
Who was the most celebrated recent rabbit? Was the one that...
Shake the Bank. Shake the Bank for Better Talk
Better
Now.
Better Talk Now. Yeah, there we go. That Grand Motion used.
But it's so rare that people remember it. It shouldn't be rare. There should be a lot of them. And there could be two rabbits in a race. Yeah. I don't understand why it's not a bigger factor in our racing.
That's a good, it's a question.
I know if I owned horses in these situations, I'd have a rabbit.
Yeah.
Especially if you're talking about somebody who's got a lot of work. You know, you're spending money for horses. I just don't.
Exactly.
I don't understand why it's...
You're trying to enhance their value. Why wouldn't you? I agree. I don't disagree at all.
Oh, it's 10:29.
Almost. Before we go, you and I talked off air, and we agreed about the Empire Six, the first of the downstate distributions. And I thought, I mean, it paid what, $6,800?
Okay, sounds right.
Which is, you know, a number that obviously goes out into a lot of hands, but it was not an easy sequence.
No, it was a very, very difficult sequence.
Yeah.
And not saying the horse couldn't win the last race, but when you close it out with an 0-for-15, Nightfall Chatterfall, Pablo Fragoso, maiden at 4-to-1, it's sort of like, okay, I'm not saying the horse couldn't win on paper, obviously. She did make a certain amount of sense, but wow, 4-to-1, and you know, they're fairly low profile connections, and there were some bunch of interesting horses in there. I found that a little bit tough and glad I didn't play. I wouldn't have been live anyway. I would have used the $38 horse, but I might have had trouble with Shugs, to be honest. I might have had trouble. You know, I wouldn't be able to get Shugs Firster and the Asmussen horse and present on the same ticket. So it wouldn't have mattered. Probably those horses were best to be in two C's at best, the way I would have looked at it. But
yeah, I
it was definitely a tough seat. I mean, you looked at it, and even with the free square with my sister Charlie, it seemed tough. You know, it really seemed like you could easily go five or six deep in a lot of the legs, and it was a tough sequence, unusual because we haven't had. I think it was probably as open a card as we've had. I mean, Saturday was somewhat open as well, but this seemed even more. You couldn't look at any of those races. I mean, I know the favorite, and I picked her, him, the Futurity. I can't get past the Matron Futurity in the wrong days. But still, it didn't seem like a race that horse would be 4-to-5, and it seemed like a lot of them could win.
And I'm just looking at Marshall's numbers.
It was around 2% takeout. They didn't bet nearly as much as I think a lot of people thought they probably would.
No, they bet pretty good.
Relatively speaking. I would say no.
Three and a half times?
No, it's four and change times, but just over four times. Maybe 4.2 times or something. But regardless, no, I think that you would have expected the number to be. I think it's the Gateway in Saratoga. I think it was a huge multiple.
Yes.
So it wasn't, you know, I think under four was a surprise.
Well, for those that took the over at 1.5 visits of my threatened trips to Belmont, you win.
You were there.
I was there twice. I was there on the Wednesday as threatened, and then followed it up
you
with
came
Saturday.
By Ohio Wednesday.
It's so funny that, you know, here it is. It's a fairly nice fall day, and you and Greg and Paul, you guys are in overcoats with gloves. I mean, it's so cold
no,
up there.
No, nobody
it's
had
crazy.
Gloves on.
Not
nobody
gloves,
had gloves
but...
on. Paul had a coat on. Yeah. Greg and I just froze. Oh, yeah, it was a big laugh. You should have sat up there for 3 hours. I'm sure
I know. It's murder. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
I'm not getting into it.
I hear
but
you.
But no, it's not. It's not a good situation.
No. Well, another couple of weeks downstate and over to Aqueduct soon enough. And the indoor, right? Indoor set, right? No more the outdoor ends. You get...
You know, it would have been so much better if we just stopped the show at 10:29. But, hey, it's been great. And
always.
I hope you have a great rest of the show. See you later.
I appreciate it. Andy Serling, 90 in, 90 to come. And we're going to get that visit in with Gorey Smith. And delighted that Gorey can join us, even under the circumstances, to talk about his friend Vinny Blanks. Bill Downs going to join us in a little bit, too. And we'll talk the two stakes in Indiana today. And then later, John White, and I was hoping for Jeremy because I want to do tomorrow's Jessamine and the a couple of other races at Keeneland. I hope Deja. I think you're gonna have to rattle Jeremy's cage. All right, Gorey Smith. When we come back.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermon on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at
502-863-1775. Who I yell love letter.
Now, back to At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Me in a letter, I yell.
We're back at the races. It's about 20 and change to the top of the hour. We're going to talk to Bill Downs in a little bit about Indiana, a couple of more stakes at Indiana today. They've been banging out midweek stakes on a regular basis there. Happy, even under the circumstances, to talk to Gorey Smith, one of the most respected horsemen anywhere in the game. And we're going to let Gorey talk about his friend Vinny Blangs, and equally respected. And I suppose, Gorey, that, you know, Vinny, there's probably a lot of people who never saw him saddle a horse, but those that did know what a great job he did for a long time.
Oh, without question. He was a good horseman, very good horseman. And I was just lucky to be in New England in the years that I was there and being associated and around Vinny. I was there for several years, and then eventually, after knowing him and all, I got to where I was stabling in the same barn with him. And anyway, the back barn going out at the back end of the Suffolk Downs was the street back there, and then there was a row of houses, and there was a subway. And then on the other side of the subway, there's another row of houses. But one of those houses was Vinny's, and he grew up there. But anyway, he'd come in through the back gate, and the first barn there on the right was his. And I got the way I was stabled in on one side of the barn, he was the other. And kind of helped me get in there with him. But he was just so much fun to be with and enjoy and you know, train horses with him and that sort of thing. He was just outstanding, I tell you that. I don't know anybody in racing that I felt it any more at ease with and respected more than I did Vinny. He was just a great horseman, had a hell of a sense of humor, and was just fun to be around. I know I'd be training horses in the morning, and I'd get there early, and he'd always come in at 6 o'clock, 6:02, right on the button. Anyway, one morning I was walking one of my horses around the barn, and he'd just walking up, and I made some comment about getting things done early. He said, son, it ain't what time you get here. It's what you do when you're here. And I never forgot that. And I couldn't answer that. So that's the way Vinny was. And but we used to have some great times. You know, Bobby DeStacio was racing secretary, and his brother Dick was a trainer. But they were all, like, you know, real close buddies and all. And I got to be friends with all of them and close to them. And Vinny just seemed like, you know, he was about a generation and a half older than I was, but I was like a kid brother. And my brother Hammy was up there, too, and they just took to us Southern boys like we just needed help. And he was there to help us, and he did. I mean, it's just to know the character of him and how much fun he was to be around. It was just, you want to go up to the racing office where Bobby was the racing secretary, and some of the boys up there, Pam Bianchi and some others, and Vinny would be up, and if he was there, then he was holding court. He was just, you know, if you could hang around with Vinny, you were having a good time. And he was just that way, unreal. And, you know, miss him like a father and a brother. I mean, he was one of the great guys in racing, wonderful man. And, you know, I know Bobby and those missed him too, but he was just one guy that you wanted to be around. When he was close, you wanted to be in his company, that's for sure.
Yeah. Gorey, one of the things that struck me when I started to, you know, come to Saratoga at first and you know, started to take the game seriously, it didn't take long for me to realize that the guys coming in from Rockingham and from Suffolk that they could come in and also Barkley Tagg coming up from, you know, from the Mid-Atlantic, that these guys were coming in and they were poaching races. And it didn't matter if it was a stake horse or if it was a mid-level, you know, claimer. Mikey Arrow Asimakopoulos.
Asimakopoulos, yep.
Vinny Blangs.
They were just great horse people, you know. It made living in up in New England during the spring, summer, and fall just so much fun, you know, to be around them. And as I got more into it through the years, sometimes we get through racing in the afternoon, we go down to Driftwood restaurant and bar down the street there to Revere, and we'd sit there for an hour or so just cutting food, you know, laughing and cutting up and just, you know, just having a good time. But it was just a good life. And, you know, when I finally got in the same barn with Vinny, we stayed together for several years, and we got real close, you know, and all. But it's like when once I got in the barn with Vinny, I felt like I got somewhere. And it was just fun. It was a pleasure to be there and enjoy, you know, being in his company and all that. He was just one of a kind. We'll sure miss him.
Yeah. You know, Gory, one thing, too, with Vinny Blangs, it seemed that it didn't matter if it was a stake horse or if it was a claimer. It got the same attention. He's one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They worked just as hard.
Oh, yeah.
On a claimer.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, he was, you know, every horse was handled and done the right way. He was all about his horses. He was proud of, you know, his stable and you know, what he accomplished and all. But he just had fun with it. He was at ease about it, you know. And it was like, you know, he made you feel like this, like you were okay, you know, that you were safe, things were going to be all right, and he was around. And it was a good feeling, really good, yeah.
Well,
good man. We'll sure miss him in racing.
You know, I mentioned, Gory, that officially Equibase lists him as having won 1,980 races, but that's only
that.
That only starts in 1963. He was winning races for 15 years before that.
Oh, yeah, long before that, yeah. We first started going to New England in the mid-50s, my family, and my brother was up there training and starting out, and my dad sent some horses up, and we've been up there ever since until racing went bad and all. But it was a great time up there. Good people.
And he also, you know, he also got, I mentioned Edgar Prado, what he did for Edgar to get him going. And,
right, that's right.
And
yeah.
Rene Douglas, too. T.D. Thornton says Rene Douglas. He helped when Rene came to the U.S.
Yeah, there were some good jocks around there. And Vinny had a lot of influence in all that. I mean, like I say, if you were in his favor around New England racing, you were in good shape. He just made things look so good and so easy for you, you know, just to enjoy it. And that's just what we did. We just had a ball. That's no lie. And I'd love to go back and do that again. My wife said the same thing. She said, I wish we'd go back and do that again. But it was a good time. Yeah, good people.
Gory, I wanted, I reached out to Don Winfrey Don had a, he's got a doctor's appointment today. I said,
yeah, Breeze was there. Breeze was right there and all that. Yeah, Don. We were all like buddies and almost brothers, you know. I used to handle a lot of horses for Donnie. I did a few for Benny back in time. But, you know, it was just a brotherhood almost. And you knew each other. It was the way racing ought to be, I'll tell you. If racetracks could go back to that time and the camaraderie and stuff, you know, everybody pulled for everybody, and it was just great. Donnie was right there in the middle of it. Sure was. Yeah.
When you shifted gears in your own career and you started down to Ellery, did you get a lot of New England horsemen? Did they send some horses to winter with you?
Oh, gosh, yeah. That's where it all started. I used to go out to the sales with my dad back in the 60s. Things started changing in the early 70s. People started going to sales and buying horses and all. I'd go up to New England in the spring with a few horses we had, and I'd have my two-year-olds running, you know, ready pretty good. And Judy Bresnahan, who had a big stable up there, he stabled right down the road from where I am. Anyway, he'd go up there, and his two-year-olds run good, and the ones I had would run good. We'd win right off, and all the people, you know, got to noticing that. And anyway, they started wanting to go out to the sales and get some young horses, and I was a part of that. And Tony Everard was up there then. He got in on that, doing that. Anyway, you know, Jerry Cheevers, he signed on with the Bruins and highest-paid athlete in history and that sort of thing, and he loved the races. Came out, We went out to Butch Lenzini, John Lenzini Jr.
Sure.
Butch and I were great friends too, and we went out to Keeneland, bought Chivas some yearlings, and one of them we bought was a Roger Baba colt, and the next year he leading money winning 2 year old in the country, and Butch trained him. His name was I can't remember his name. Butch trained him, and you know he won six races. But Vinny and all those boys, I had a few for those fellas too, and they just all did good. But it was just great racing. And Royal Ski was his name.
Okay.
And, he was the leading money winning 2 year old in '76. Anyway, you know all these boys, they were all just like a group of guys, you know, going. And Vinny and those came out to the sales and bought some yearlings too, and they did good. I can remember going out there, you know, with Vinny and those and looking at yearlings back in those middle 70s, early 70s. And then racing started to come apart in New England, and it just kind of put an end to all that up there. And everybody started heading one direction or another.
Scattered. Everybody scattered.
Yep. Yeah, and Vinny saw it, and I think he just decided, you know, he'd retire and go to Florida and had, you know, enjoyed it. About a year ago, he and Bobby DeStacio were sitting down there watching races at the Gulfstream or somewhere right around there. Anyhow, they got some telling stories, I guess, and something came up about me, so they decided to give me a call. Anyhow, Vinny calls up. He says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm on the track, the Heron Racetrack." They thought that was a hoot. You know, Smitty on the damn track, the Heron Racetrack, in the middle of the afternoon. And they were down there having a ball. Same thing. I mean, they were living the same life down there they did in New England. They just, you know, life was good. They were just good people like that. Man, you know, those are the memories you never get over. And good people. None better than him, I'll tell you.
Gorey Smith is with us, remembering Vinny Blangs. And while we're together, Gorey, I'm going to slip in a news story from yesterday that came out, and that was that Hammy retired talk show man.
Yeah, I think they did. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's been a really good horse in Hammy's barn for the last several years, and real consistent old horse, and he did a great job, you know, getting him to the races and keeping them together. And you know, year after year, there for about 5 years, he was around. You had to beat him. Yeah.
8 for 40, 456,000. And how is Hammy? Because I heard earlier in the year he wasn't doing so good. He had a little problem.
No, he's a little blood pressure deal, but he's doing okay. I get on him pretty good about it, but you know, Jody, his wife Jody, she'll stand him up when she has to.
and final question too. Who's the next big young jockey that you're working with right now? You're molding into a star.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I got three boys that's called about coming, and trying to get one or two. Matter of fact, one boy called this morning while I was out here with the yearlings, getting on his yearlings, getting them started, and I gave him in a little bit ago, and go to the desk. I said, "Here's a note from a boy that called about wanting to come down." Dale Roman's got a kid up there, Churchill, supposed to be coming. So I'm looking to get about three boys here right now and in the next week or 10 days and get them going. We'll see what happens. But it's fun. You know, it's fun doing that. I enjoy doing it with these kids.
Well,
giving them all something to work for. Yeah.
Well, you teach them the right way and send them out, you know, out into the game, and with your tutelage, and it's about as good an education as anybody's going to get. How many yearlings poking around right now? How many are you working with?
We have about 110 right now, but we should by the end of December or so we'd be up around 140-150. And we got about 20 or so due to come in here in the next week or 10 days. So, you know, there's another sale coming up, and some others out on some farms will be here a little later, like they always. But, you know, we'll have something to do anyway. We'll get these boys in here and see if we can make something out of them. But, you know, just like you're talking about, the racetrack life and the people in it, you know, these young boys, a lot of grand girls, you know, they come from some homes that weren't the best homes in the world, maybe, but you know, something like this can give them a dream or something to work towards. And you know, you get around good racetracks and all, and get to know the right people. It doesn't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Gorey, it's always a treat. Even saying goodbye to Vinnie Blanks, to be able to bring you to our audience, I greatly appreciate it.
Well, I thank you, but he was a great one. I sure hate to see that, but it all comes. But he was one of a kind. Yes, he was.
Now, there's going to be a celebration in December at Gulfstream. There'll be a Vinnie Blanks race, and
is that right? Oh, great!
Yeah. They'll name a date and get everybody, some advance notice for those that come down. And for those that want to do something in Vinny's memory, the family would like donations to the PDJF, to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys.
Oh, good. PDJF.org. Well, I look forward to finding out about that and helping out with that. Yeah. Anything for Vinny.
I love it.
Anybody, guy like him, let me stable with him. I felt like I was privileged, but he was one of a kind. Yes, sir.
Gorey, thank you so much.
Thank you for asking me. Yep, we'll miss him.
We'll see you over the winter, I hope. Gorey Smith, everybody, down at Ellery, South Carolina. And look at that, 140 yearlings to get them started and turn them into two-year-olds. He's a legend. Gorey Smith. Frank Gorey Smith, as respected, appreciated, revered as anybody, and perfect choice to appreciate Vinnie Blanks, who died at the age of 90 on Saturday. Take a break. Top of the hour approaching. We've got a visit coming with Bill Downs, and we got John White, and we'll see about Jeremy. I don't know. Jeremy's funny. Some Tuesdays he's sitting around doing nothing. A lot of times he's listening to the show because he'll text me. Other Tuesdays he disappears. So we'll see. Maybe we'll get him. Maybe we won't. Back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com, use a promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
This is At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Under the island, middle of the mountain, there is a big bad booming system. Blowing speakers, woofers and tweeters, amplifiers, melted wires. The party's exploded, chorus corroded, underground the Puget Sound.
We're back at the races, 11 o'clock. Almost just a tick underneath, and an hour to spend with you. Hour three. We'll start with Bill Downs out to Indiana Grand, and another midweek of stakes action. And the Indiana Breds, the Indiana Stallion, and more. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. I was trying last week. I was going to try to slip you in for a little bonus coverage because the two stakes last week caught my eye, and what I thought was ended up being fairly chalky. It was like a $60 pick four, but the Gus Grissom last week and the Richmond stake, you know, on paper they were both kind of interesting. We didn't get to connect, but Operation Stevie for Cipriano Contreras and Manny Esquivel swept both stakes.
Yes, and the defending champions in both races came back to win once again. You mentioned Operation Stevie in the Gus Grissom Stakes. Didn't stay that far off the pace. Usually Operation Stevie likes to come from the clouds, but was not that far back. I'm just looking at the chart. It was only about five lengths off the lead at the half-mile pole and was able to wear down Mystery Unbridled, who was probably the bet in the race and ran a very game second. Mystery Unbridled in the race before that ran in a turf race, and he was he likes to be not that far off the pace. He was covered up. He was ranked, and then there was an Amos horse that came out into his path and caused a big old jam-up. So he was like a throw-a-line through the race before. But the Operation Stevie won at even money, and then in the sixth race on Wednesday, it was the Richmond Stakes. And Expect Indy, who last year showed a lot more early speed in the Richmond Stakes, didn't stay far off the pace. Umbrella Class looked like that she would make the lead, and she did. She had a clear lead, but Expect Indy always had her in her sights, wore her down at the eighth pole, went on by and won by five lengths. And Expect Indy has gotten the upper hand on an Unbridled Class, I think, two of the last three times. So, but still a nice little rivalry between those two fillies in the Richmond Stakes.
Well, and you know, the program. I mean, these were what? They're both 100,000. Yeah, they're both 100,000. Yep. It's such a terrific. You know, you look up and down at the state bred program, and you know you're still running almost what 50%, right, of the cards.
I mean, say that again.
Of state bred. I mean, the state bred races represent what percentage?
I don't know if it's that much. It's some days it seems that way. I would have to ask Kevin Greeley, our racing director, what the breakdown is for thoroughbreds and quarter horses and what the percentage is for Indiana races.
That's interesting.
I don't think you're that far off. I would say it might be a little bit less, but that would just be my guess. But I don't know off the top of my head.
In some states, it depends on the jurisdiction. Some states have, as part of, you know, particularly in gaming states, where there's a certain percentage of races have to be run for the state bred program, and it's part of the funding, you know, for you know, the breeder awards and a lot of that. And that's one of the things that, you know, when we talk about state bred programs, and you know, Indiana has, that it's really been the linchpin to, you know, the growth and to the, you know, the success that Indiana has seen, you know, really over what, the last, it's basically 15 years, give or take.
Yeah, I think 97 was when Hoosier Park came online, and then a few years later it was Indiana Downs, and we've had a couple of ownership changes, but it changed it to Indiana Grand, five, 6 years ago, and that's what it's been called ever since. But yeah, I know in a lot of jurisdictions, if you have X amount in the book, if you get like six, or you have to run a state bred race. The Indiana breds, especially, let's talk about this real quick. I know at this time of year, you're going to see a lot more drop downs in class, especially in claiming races, as trainers try and owners and trainers trying to find races that they could win, because after the first or second week of November, whatever it is, early November, right after the Breeders' Cup, when our meet closes, there's no more Indiana bred races until mid-April.
Right.
So
right.
You will see, from a handicapping perspective, you know, you'll see some drops. You might go, well, why is this? This is a bad drop. This is a suspicious drop. Where in essence, it's like, okay, you want to claim this horse. There's no state bred races here. You're going to have to go, you know, meet up down at Churchill Downs or wherever you want to go, Turfway Park, or with a new Turfway Park, whatever you want to call it. You know, in the wintertime, in the fall, and you don't have those state bred races. So that, you know, when you take a look at races at Indiana Grand the last few weeks of the meet, keep that in mind.
I love it, Bill. That's a terrific piece of advice on the drop downs and why they're there, and as opposed to the typical handicapping approach where you say, this is a giveaway. Maybe it is, and maybe and this, as you lay out, they're just, you know, if somebody wants to take them and spend the winter against open company, so be it. Very interesting. I'm glad you went in that direction. Well, the two state bred stakes tonight, this afternoon, 5:03, the Crown Ambassador, and this one going six. These are the boys, and then you've got the Indiana Stallion for the fillies, and nice big bulky fields. What? Let's talk about the Crown Ambassador.
Yeah, probably from a betting perspective, I like the Indiana Stallion Stakes for the fillies a little bit better. But
yeah,
let's talk about the Crown Ambassador. You got Cash Logistics, the even money favorite, who was very, very sharp in a win in his debut on September the 4th. Stayed right off of a pretty contested pace. It showed some good early speed, and it took over and won rather easily. James Graham was aboard on that afternoon. He's back in Indiana once again. And I think he is the one to beat. Maters and Taters ran so well two starts ago, August 28th, took an open cuff, and he didn't get the lead, and then faded back to fourth. I think he can improve if he gets the lead, but unfortunately, the five Rampage has got a lot of early speed as well. So it looks like, you know, those two horses are going to be the duly for the top spot. Cash Logistics, I think, right off the pace. Hopefully Graham can get a trip right behind the speed. And then Don't Ask Him had improved a lot in his career, second career start. He lost to Meters and Taters, but he was bet down as the odds-on favorite next time out. And so Don't Ask Kidman was almost a three-length winner of a maiden race at September 18th and comes back for Ronald Kidman. And so, therefore, I think he has a chance as well. But still, to me, unfortunately, I think the chalk is legit with Cash Logistics, but decided to give you a few of the other contenders from a handicapping perspective to take a look at in the Crown Ambassador as race seven.
Well, and I suppose if, you know, as a second-time starter, if Cash Logistics is to be beaten, it's going to have to come from, you know, from some pressure, and there's a little bit of speed, I guess. I guess Rampage, right? Rampage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The that's the you know, if Rampage runs back, I'm just looking at now. That Cash Logistics debut. That's a race that would hold its own, frankly. The horse that he beat came right back, and Chip Off the Old Block came right back to win.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, sometimes. I'm guilty of this as well as a handicapper. I'm always trying to be the favorite. I'm like, I got to be the favorite. I got to be the favorite. And you know, sometimes I overreach with you know trying to come up with a scenario. But for me, Cash Logistic, he won that race so easily too. Now, and he also has over a month rest, so it's not like he's wheeling back in 2 weeks in his first start against winners and all that. So I just think if he was drawn on the outside, I would say I would be really stunned if he would lose this race. But I just think Cash Logistics is a legit favorite in the Crown Ambassador.
And one thing to note too about that Chip Off the Old Block that came back to win, with Declan Carroll and came back with a 58 buyer. So after getting beaten by 5+. By Cash Logistics in the debut, that horse came back and ran, a very similar race. So Cash Logistics was very much complimented by the runner-up out of his debut. So this actually is a horse to keep an eye on. And I'm just looking on ThoroughGraph because I was curious what he ran on ThoroughGraph. He ran a 10.5 on ThoroughGraph. Wow. That's an open company number. So. This is clearly what do we know about Genevieve Londano? It doesn't send out a lot of starters.
No, I'm just sitting at 12% this year. I'm just looking at the stats, just like you. I'm just going to hit. She's run a horse, occasional horse here at Indiana Grand, but it certainly she doesn't necessarily. Huh. For her career, she's this would be. Easily her biggest, she's only won 3 races in her North American career. I'm just looking at it right now, 3 for 43 lifetime. And the three wins, I think, were this horse on September 4th. Yeah, just excuse me while I take a look at everything. Yeah. And so this would be her biggest win was the maiden race with Cash Logistics. And the other two wins were a maiden claiming race at Belterra and a claiming race at Belterra. So this would be a gigantic stepping stone for Genevieve Londano.
Well, of course, the family, the Londano, they run in Ohio.
Yeah,
you see them in the Ohio PPs regularly.
Right.
So I think her father, probably her father and brother. All right. We got somebody to. I'm actually seeing what I'm seeing here, Bill. I'm surprised that they have not gotten a call. The Hancocks, James and Charlie Hancock, are the owners and the breeders. And I suppose this gets back to the Indiana storyline. But I imagine they're going to get some offers on that horse. I'm just speculating. Let's take a look at the Stallion race. And as you mentioned, you got a bigger field in here and a little bit more wide open than the even money favorite.
Yes, a lot of horses coming out of the City of Anderson Stakes on September 11th, in which they set a very, very fast pace, 21 4/5 on September 11th. And the final running time was 1:14, so it didn't come home that quick. At least the third place horse, Mint Chocolate Chip, came back to win next time out. But she's not in this race. I made 5-2 on the 7 Betcha just because she pressed that very hot pace. And, that ought to tell you how wide open I think the race is that I made her 5-2, and she was a huge price last time out. Super Gen, I made the second choice, was dead last, had to pass everyone. Changed the running style after her maiden win, in which she went to the front end, but she must not have broke that well. But she was closing in fast to finish fifth. But the horse The filly I like the most, Steve, is CJ's Empire for trainer Stephen Fosdick. Came like the, as Trevor likes to say, Trevor Devon likes to say, the express train on August the 27th, in which she closed over six lengths to get up for her maiden win in the City of Anderson Stakes. Watched the race back. The jockey dropped the whip at the top of the stretch, and in a race where there was a lot of closers, I don't think that's what that was an ideal situation. So hopefully Zeke Lara, the jockey, and CJ's Empire will keep the riding crop this time. And I think CJ's Empire, you know, has the rail and a big field, but she's a closer, so I don't think it makes that as big a difference as it does for an early speed horse. But I liked what I've seen from CJ's Empire, and watching what happened in that last race, the City of Anderson, exactly when the jock dropped the riding crop. I like CJ's Empire coming back here in the Indiana Stallion Stakes. That would be my top choice.
Now, a couple of, again, lightly raced types that got spirit. That won at First Asking, you know, got a moderate fig. This is an animal style filly that won by five. Ron Harrell, somebody else who doesn't send out a lot of horses, only seven starters on the year, and this is his only winner. But you know, second out, and just you're not going to get 80-1, but FYI, it just so happens that this is the, I guess Harrell has had 2 2-year-olds. He's 1 for 2, and this horse went out at, you know, 39-1, and won at First Asking, and actually had a horse behind her that won next out. So she was flattered. She's far from impossible, and here Super Jen is okay too for Bernie Flint, 3-1. Marcelino Pedroza, you mentioned the City of Anderson exiters as well. Nice little group. Sentimental Journey also, Bernie Flint, and the race two back is competitive here.
Yes, but going back to Got Spirit, Zeke Lara was aboard Got Spirit for Ron Harrell, and then Zeke was aboard, obviously, CJ's Empire, and Lara is aboard CJ's Empire over Got Spirit. Mentioned, I just looked up Ron's stats over the years. He's had 23 career wins, looks like about 8%, if my math is correct, over his career. He had one, I guess, big horse, horse named Hoosier Kingdom, back in the day. I don't remember Hoosier Kingdom.
I've seen that name. Absolutely, I've seen that name.
Yeah, so I'm just looking here at his stats. And, yeah, it was right before I was, I started Indiana Grand in 2013. He was a big runner back in 2000, from 2008 to 2012. So that was his big horse, if you will, but Got Spirits. Yeah, you know, he won that. She won that race rather easily on September 17th. Yes, Trouble with Shelbyville came back to win. But if you were to say, you know, we talked about that other horse the previous race, I think that came back to win. Trouble with Shelbyville hasn't shown me enough yet to really upgrade Got Spirits race. But you know, certainly he can run. She can run. But I like CJ's Empire a little bit. But if I'm going deep in the late pick four, I would definitely use Got Spirit in there as well as Betcha.
That's a good group. And there's not a lot separating these fillies. Really,
no.
Top to bottom. So this is a place. One of those frustrating scenarios where you reach for a price and you know, one of the favorites wins. And but it's a nice sequence today again, and the action at Indiana starts at 2:15 Eastern. There's a full field of open company maidens as well that goes as the sixth, and Any multi-race options? Brad Cox figures figures prominent in there. He's got a Don Alberto homebred. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Palifa. Wow. I didn't bring up, you know, I had Brendan Walsh yesterday. We didn't get to B-Wings, the Fed biz, or did we? I can't remember if we talked. I don't think we talked about B-Wings. I think we focused on his other runners at Keeneland. But it's a nice card, and the two stakes, they come back tomorrow. And as Bill always reminds everybody, typically Wednesdays have some of the biggest fields of the race week. And looking at the second half tomorrow, 11 by 9 by 10 by 10 by 12. You got a nice couple of days here as the last few weeks of the meet, right? We got, 2.5 weeks left?
Well, we ended right the Wednesday after the Breeders' Cup, if I'm not mistaken. It's like November 5th or 6th, whatever that Wednesday is.
That sounds good.
But you mentioned the Wednesday card. It was like turn back the clock day when I got the overnight for Wednesday, because 10 thoroughbred races plus 2 quarter horse races, 12 race cards. It's a good problem to have. And like you said, I think there's like 1 7 horse field or something like that. So it's not like we're running, you know, a couple fives and sixes in there to, you know, just to make 12. It's a legitimate. We got the horses for that day, and so we're going to run them. And because Wednesdays is our biggest handle day of the racing week, 12 race cards on Wednesday.
Well, save your voice.
And the weather should be great too all week long. It's been unbelievable how everyone likes to. I always on Twitter I get some naysayers or some people that like to complain a little bit, and they're like, "Oh, it's always rains in Indianapolis." I'm like, "Well, yes, in the summertime we do get a lot of rain. It's just how it is." But this last 5-6 weeks, whatever it's been, we've barely gotten any rain. So the turf course is in great condition for this time of year, and even if we do get doused with some rain eventually, sometime in October, it shouldn't be that bad because we haven't had that much rain over the last 5-6 weeks.
Well, Bill, stakes action today, and another nice card tomorrow, and we'll be watching and playing, and I appreciate the visit as always. We'll talk to you before Breeders' Cup on the 22nd.
All righty. Thanks, Steve.
Not at all. Bill Downs, everybody. You follow Bill on Twitter, Bill Downs 1, the voice of Indiana Grant. Yeah, that Indiana Stallion stake today, this Phillies, and this sort of gets back to what we were talking about with Andy. Top figure in this field is a 45 buyer. And everybody else has run 30s and 20s. We didn't mention Betcha, the 5-2 favorite for Gennaro Garcia. .41 buyer in her last race. There's not a lot separating this bunch. I think you reach for a price. And Joe McKay, my man Smoking Joe. We did talk about B-Wings. I guess so. Joe says yes. Joe says we did talk about B-Wings yesterday. I try to write the notes down, but there's only so much I can keep track of. Let's take a break. John White's going to swing through, and we'll get John's take on some of the other stakes that we didn't really talk about, and not just stakes action at Santa Anita, but plenty of maidens and more. Also, a couple of allowance types. I saw where Derlew won for Baffert. There had been some expectation about Derlew earlier in the year. John White joins us next from Santa Anita. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Deep. DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Yeah, we got free tickets to the Brand Band concert happening this Monday night at Pacific Palisades. Well, you can all in if you want to answer.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right.
I woke up again this morning with the sun in my eyes. When Mike came over with a script surprise. A mafioso story with a twist. A two-wall fool, Julie Newmar, here to get your ass out of bed. He said, I'll explain it on the way. But we did nothing.
So we left nothing that day. And I said, what the hell am I doing drinking in L.A. at any city?
We're back at the races, little Brand Band. Always a treat. John White going to join us and dive into some of the races we haven't had a chance to talk about yet. We did talk to Richard Mandela yesterday, which is always a treat. He's funny, he's smart, he's sardonic, self-effacing, and he's a genius.